Welcome, dumbheads, to this week's megasode of MDC, the Mega Dumbcast. Monday through Saturday, I drop one micro-podcast per day identifying the dumbest thing on every single goddamn page of Ninjas and Super Spies, the ridiculous RPG from Palladium Books. On Sundays, I combine all the previous week's episodes in one megasode, like this one. If you want to follow along at home, we are reading Revised Ninjas and Super Spies, 7th printing, from the year 2000. Today we're discussing page 85 of Ninjas and Super Spies. It is, as I record this episode, my birthday. That's why I'm allowing myself to drink some coffee while I record, despite the fact that this is not going to be a long recording session. It's my little gift to me. Happy birthday, Chris. You made great life choices. It's been a journey of decades, but finally I have matured from enjoying Ninjas and Super Spies earnestly to enjoying it, ironically, a life well spent. Unfortunately, perhaps for you, the listener, I'm going to be recording a number of episodes in this sitting, which means that my birthday copy may extend for you for a whole week or beyond. But at least it's happening now that we're into the actual martial arts forms, when I'm going to have plenty to talk about in between sips of coffee. If this had happened back when we were in the vehicle section, my birthday gift to me might have been skipping pages that consist only of tables, which would have left me without a lot of content for a week or two. But enough about me. Let's talk about Bakpai. It is the primary martial art discussed on page 85. It is crane-style kung fu, one of the major styles of kung fu that everybody kind of knows, not one of the little niche ones. It's a balanced style. It does attack and defense. It does different ranges and all that stuff. Its gimmick, however, is that it mimics the movements of a crane with big sweeps and pecking motions. This pecking motion is implemented in the rules as the crane fist, a special, quote, beak-like formation of thumb and fingertips that does 1d8 damage. Like a regular punch, but pointier, it does a little more damage than your conventional punch. And, importantly, it locks into the marquee ability of the crane-style kung fu master, which is a special kata that is also the dumbest thing on this page. And I quote, "Crane stance is a one-legged stance with one leg straight and the other bent so the ankle is right at the knee. Arms are outstretched with elbows up and hands pointing down in crane fist positions. The character cannot advance, retreat, or dodge, and attacks are limited to the crane fist and crescent kick. Bonuses are +4 to parry, +6 to maintain balance, and +2 to strike. In addition, the crane stance bonus of +2 to strike bonuses count toward critical strikes." And then in parentheses, they don't have to be natural rolls. Which, I guess the idea there would be that not only do you get +2 to strike, but that +2 modifies your natural die roll for purposes of critical hit. So if that's the case, then you get a lot more crits out of this stance, which is all well and good. You're going to be able to do a lot of precision strikes with your pointy little fists, which is why this is called crane stance. However, an alternate, perhaps equally appropriate name for this stance would be please murder me with bullets stance. Because as you may have noticed if you were reading the fine print there in the middle, the character cannot advance, retreat, or dodge. And this is a kata. Here's the thing to know about katas. A kata is like a special battle mode. It's like when you're playing Punch-Out, and then, you know, your enemy does the little tell, and then they go into a routine that's always going to be exactly the same. That's how katas operate in Ninjas and Super Spies, and they always take one complete melee round. So you engage it like on your first action of the melee round, and then you're going to be subject to the bonuses and limitations of your kata throughout the round. You can't opt out of it. In this case, when you enter crane stance, as soon as that foot raises off the ground and you're up on one foot, that is a clear signal to your foe as you stand there with your little pointy crane fists. I'm not going anywhere. I literally cannot move for the rest of this round. Not only can I not move, but I can't even dodge. While I can parry effectively, and I can hit you with my little pointy fists if you get close, you're under no obligation to get close. You can move in or out, and there's nothing I can do. And I have no effective defense against ranged attacks. Back when we were talking about hot air balloons, which we were doing a couple of episodes ago, we were mentioning that they were perhaps not ideal escape conveyances in this game because they are vulnerable to being punctured by bullets or ninja stars, which are commonly carried by super spies and ninjas. The same vulnerability holds true for the crane, which is, of course, nature's hot air balloon. As soon as you start to lift that knee in the air, all your foes have to do is, you know, back off from you a few steps and then just mercilessly riddle you with bullets for the rest of the round. There's nothing you can do. Perhaps you're thinking, Well, okay, it's a tactical option for a specific tactical situation. This is for if you get into, like, a nasty, dirty fist fight in cramped quarters with somebody who, you know, is not, like, a sniper or something. It's just a fight. Then you, you know, go into crane stance, and then in close quarters like that, you're really going to kick ass. But mechanically, that prohibition against dodging is punishing. Like, let's say that you get into a fight in your house. You know, somebody just, like, busts in and decides to start wailing on you. You go into crane stance. This is somebody who didn't bring a gun. They don't have, like, their throwing knives or whatever. They just, you know, they were passing by. They saw you in the window, and they thought, you know, that guy's got a nice TV. I'll steal it. Once you go into crane stance and you can't move, even this hapless goon has no incentive not to just back off from you and, like, huck your microwave at you or start throwing steak knives at you from the kitchen. You can't defend yourself, and you can't attack while this person is standing out of range. So that's just a free round to try to hit you with kitchen knives. Then when you walk into the kitchen to try to stop this guy before he ruins all your good knives, that prevents you from using the kata for the turn. It's too bad because crane-style kung fu is pretty iconic, but what's going to happen is as soon as you get those elbows up and you stand there looking dramatic, your foes are going to immediately destroy you with a hail of gunfire and whatever improvised objects come to hand. And that's going to make you a sad crane. Please murder me with bullets stance is the dumbest thing on this page. Today we're discussing page 86 of Ninjas and Super Spies, which is devoted to Chachuan Kung Fu, a martial art form practiced by, gasp, Muslims. Yes, Muslims, whose absence has been conspicuous since all the way back in the Nation of Origin table, where we found that no Middle Eastern or African countries at all were represented in this game of international warfare and espionage. And at the time, I think we thought this was merely an ethnocentric oversight. The game is Ninjas and Super Spies, so the only countries represented on the tables were the ones that were foremost in the author's mind when he thought of ninjas and super spies. Countries like China, Japan, the United States, and, you know, the Soviet Union. That should have probably been our first clue that something was up, but I am ashamed to admit that the continued existence of the USSR in the year 2000 was not enough to clue me into what's really going on in this game's world. It took a second strange discrepancy to do that, one that I actually found on this page, that Chachuan Kung Fu is, we are informed, a Mongolian style meant to be practiced on horseback that relies heavily on jump kicks. That's almost the dumbest thing on this page, but the dumbest thing is the reason for it. The fact that this game takes place in an alternate reality where Islam is lava. What the Islam is lava rule means is that while Islam is grudgingly permitted to exist in the world of this game, it isn't allowed to touch anything else. This is an alternate reality where there are no Muslims in spy agencies, no Muslims in America or the USSR, for sure. They just live in countries that aren't on our random tables, we don't talk about, doing things that never interact with our perfect Manichaean Cold War fantasy at all. And that's not just true in the present. This is not just a day without a Muslim. It's been true throughout this fucked up alternate reality in which Ninjas and Super Spies takes place. For example, in the real world, Chachuan is associated with the Hui ethnic group in China, who are a mostly assimilated Muslim ethnic group among the Han Chinese, but many of whom still maintain their Muslim religious practices throughout the country. It's a complicated relationship. Chachuan has legendary beginnings that may vaguely relate to Mongolia, but it is definitely one of a number of Chinese Muslim martial arts, and it's been influential. It influenced Wushu, which is like the quintessential Chinese martial art. But not so in the tidy fantasy world of ninjas and super spies, where we cannot tolerate something as messy as Chinese people who practice Islam, by which I mean practice lava. We have to keep that shit separated. So in the world of ninjas and super spies, we are informed Chachuan is a secret martial art practiced only by goat herding nomads out in the desert where their Islam is safely contained and can't burn any houses down. But now we've got a real problem. We've allowed Muslims to exist in Mongolia, which is right between the USSR and China, two places that we care about in this game because they produce super spies and ninjas respectively. But don't panic and surrender to the lava just yet. It's not like the real world where Mongolia was a key pawn, a key piece in Sino-Soviet relations, allegedly had one of its Khans actually poisoned by Russian spies at one point. I know that sounds like a cool spy story, but if you let Mongolia get involved in global politics, we got Muslims in there, pretty soon we're all up to our armpits in lava. So in this fantasy world, Mongolia is just a big, empty desert that nobody cares about. And I quote from the game, as remote from contemporary Western civilization as anywhere in the world. Speaking of the USSR and Khans that they may or may not have assassinated, this Islam is lava theory explains why they're still kicking around in the year 2000 in Ninjas and Super Spies. Some have suggested that the beating the Soviets took in Afghanistan in the 1980s was a, quote, key factor in the fall of the Soviet Union. I would cite that quote, but it is from an academic source, and I am too ashamed of having read it for this dumb podcast to go into any more details. But anyway, believe me. So in the fantasy world of Ninjas and Super Spies, since Muslims can never affect anyone or anything, they never had a problem in Afghanistan. What Afghanistan, they would say. And so they just kept on trucking into the 21st century, an unexpected consequence of our no Islam policy. Who would have guessed that Islam is important to world history? As you can see, all this dodging the lava adds up to a completely separate and mostly boring alternate timeline. Like, for example, in history, there's a total badass and historical player character named Wang Ziping, who was a master of Chaquan, and used it to kick the asses of some German soldiers who were trying to steal the doors of a mosque in China. He probably beat them with his green dragon sword technique, which is totally a real thing in history that he invented. But now, look, history is a mess. You've got Islam all up in China, lava everywhere. So instead, in Ninjas and Super Spies, there was no Wang Ziping. There were no Chaquan masters fighting in the Boxer Rebellion, being badasses. Instead, it's just a bunch of stereotypical, uncivilized Mongolians herding goats, riding horses in an empty desert, practicing a form of Sufism that we are assured is, quote, not to be confused with the fanatical sects of Islam normally found in the Middle East. Problem solved, threat averted, no lava to disrupt our perfect system, our almost perfect system. If you were a bunch of Chinese Muslims practicing martial arts, like around the same time as the Shaolin, in the same lineage as Wushu, you would expect a lot of acrobatics, fancy kicks. But in our immaculate fantasy world, there is a question of why a bunch of ethnically Mongolian goat herders are out there in the desert practicing a martial art with a Chinese name, training in solitude to do jump kicks off the back of horses. The answer to this conundrum is, of course, because in Ninjas and Super Spies, Islam is lava. And that is the dumbest thing on this page. Today we're discussing page 87 of Ninjas and Super Spies. This page features the White Jade Fan style, which is the first style in this book that is truly mechanically fucked. It is the beginning of a trend in this book where we begin a form with kind of a cool idea. Palladium is full of cool ideas. You know, neat little evocative things that will stick with you when you read them as a 14-year-old. But then, through their tremendous mechanical incompetence, manage to write rules that gradually erode their cool idea into a parody of itself. And that is certainly what happens with the White Jade style. So let me start with the good stuff. And I quote, started in the 5th century BC as a defense mechanism for the bureaucrat class of the ancient Chinese dynasties, all the movements involve the use of the White Jade Fan, actually a fan-like metal weapon, for both disarming opponents and poking. The Chison Men master will attempt to calm any enemy with both a relaxed pose and friendly words. Then, preferably when the enemy is off guard, the fan can be whipped out of the sleeve and used either to disarm or attack. So this is a very cool, refined, noble style. You got your big Chinese sleeves, you got your noble bearing, you're standing there cross-armed, somebody comes up to you talking trash, and you're like, uh-huh, oh, I see. Nonetheless, you know, I still like and respect you and you are free to your opinion. And then you whip the fan out of the sleeve and you, in one smooth movement, disarm them of their weapon and then, jab them with your other fan, right? You got these two big metal fans. It's a cool style for Chinese bureaucrats or people who are Chinese bureaucrats at heart. The style does come with a lot of things to recommend it. It gives you weapon proficiency blunt that uses the White Jade Fan, also weapon proficiency paired with the White Jade Fan. This means that you get proficiency in both and you get katas in both, so you can use them with the style, unlike all those weapons that Chachuan gets but can't use because they forgot to give them weapon katas. You get some cool martial arts powers too. You get a temi, which not many martial arts start with. This is pressure point mastery. So once again, very much in keeping with the noble image, the noble gimmick, like a Vulcan, you're too refined to just punch people out. You just kind of poke them with your fingers in strategic locations and disable them. So it is an effective but genteel style appropriate to the Chinese noble who just needs to disarm and disable attackers rather than engaging in unrefined fisticuffs. But this is where our troubles begin, because absolutely everything about that breaks down when you look at the rules of this style. First of all, the idea of whipping out your fan unexpectedly to disarm your opponent, that can't actually happen in this game. You can't use a disarm offensively until you first controlled someone with a hold or a joint lock, neither of which this style has. The closest thing is maybe a grab. This is a maneuver that the game helpfully describes only in a glossary, rather than putting it here with the styles or in the combat section. It's possible that you could first use that. You still can't do it by surprise, but maybe you could like roughly grab someone's hand and then just kind of like whack at it with your fan to try to get them to drop their weapon. Seems somewhat less refined. Also impossible if you're holding two fans, which this style says you're supposed to do. But that's okay. You don't need to disarm your opponent of their weapon. If you can simply use a temi, the art of pressure point mastery, to disable them, and then they'll, you know, a paralyzed opponent, they'll just drop it on their own, right? However, what's weird about a temi is there's like six a temi powers. Four of them explicitly can't be used with a fan attack, right? They can't be used with weapons. So of the six powers you could get, four of them are right away off the table if you're going to be dual wielding fans. There's one more of them which requires a punch slash touch, which unless touch means I touch you with my big fucking metal thing I'm holding in my hand, I think it's a non-weapon attack too. So that leaves one, Withering Flesh, which is maybe conceivably usable. Like, you could argue with your GM about it. Your GM, however, should know better than to agree with you, because if you can use Withering Flesh with your fans, your enemies are in for a world of hurt. The hidden benefit of this style is actually that paired weapons kata. Being able to use two fans, paired weapons in Palladium is really good. You can almost pretty much double your number of attacks. Withering Flesh is a pressure point attack that will reduce your opponent's SDC to half the first time you hit them and to one on the second hit. You can knock down those big chunks of SDC like a sumo wrestler or somebody would have in two successful attacks, unless your opponent rolls with punch, which requires an action. So you can cheese out with your two fans and out action economy your foe. Now, I know you wanted to play a refined noble, but I'm just trying to give you solid advice for beating sumo wrestlers. The thing to do is not to stand there with your arms folded in your big ornate silk sleeves and wait for the sumo to try to get rough with you and then, you know, make one fluid motion and disable them. This game doesn't allow for that. But what you can do is jump a sumo wrestler, pull out both your fans, just keep them closed, just use them like little chopsticks that you hold like daggers, and just poke the shit out of that sumo wrestler, two-fisted, forcing them to expend all their actions until they have no more left and can no longer roll with the punches, and then just poke them to death with Withering Flesh Atemi. It may not be dignified, but it is at least effective. Or it would be if, in a final wonderful coup de grace of mechanical incompetence, this game had not, in fact, forgotten to put the Jade White fan, like the literal fan, into this game. Yes, the weapon that this style is named after does not exist, which is, you know, zen in its own way, but maybe not terribly playable. That simple and perfect mistake is Palladium at its finest, and it is definitely the dumbest thing on this page. The absence of the fans pretty much makes this style unplayable. Although, you know, you're never opening the fans anyway to do your dual fist poke attack, so if you can find like some drumsticks or some knitting needles, then knock yourself out. Well, for a few days now, we've been talking about fancy pants, flippy dippy kung fu forms. It's time to talk about a man's form, a monster's form, the martial arts form for somebody who wants to go out there into the squared circle with nothing but a singlet and a lot of body hair and an unpopular country of origin and beat some baby-faced sap within an inch of his life. It's China, or as I like to call it, Memphis-style kung fu. Now, it's not for the faint of heart. The rules here on page 88 say it's for the most dishonorable, the most loathsome fighters. It's also going to cost you some money, and I quote here from the brochure. Initial acceptance also requires the potential student to make a large cash gift from $10,000 to $100,000, and after that you keep paying $1,000 to $5,000 a year. But you're not going to mind paying in, because it's not just a school, it's a family. You got to swear an oath never to reveal anything about another living Chin'a master. So if anybody starts asking questions, just kayfabe, brother. We all got to protect each other. You've got responsibilities. But ooh, the perks and ooh, the power of China. It's got a paralysis strike. That's like a trapezius nerve hold. You get 2 Atemi powers, so you can just grab your opponent and squeeze those pressure points until he says, I quit. The Iron Claw, the Tongan Death Grip. You pick your poison and just kill him dead with it. And suppose you get tired. We got arm holds, we got leg holds, we got neck holds. We got an automatic hold if you're too tired to hold, but you still want to hold. Even if you're 100% out of gas, you can just grab that headlock. It's like cruise control for wrestling. But we got high spots, too. We got +9 bonus to damage, higher than any of those complicated chop suey martial arts. Now, you're not going to learn too many moves that actually use that bonus, but you will learn the classics. You got your punch. Nothing wrong with the good old closed fist. You got your claw hand for raking the back. Not a move that looks too devastating, the back rake, but it does 1d6 damage. That's a lot of damage. You know what 1d6 to the back looks like? That's deep furrows. You're going to be able to plant corn in your back after I'm done raking it. The crush slash squeeze. That's a bear hug, brother. And if all else fails, the choke. That's right, I told you this was a rough style. We're not above getting our hands dirty by cheating if the fight isn't going our way. In fact, we get 1 power from Art of Invisibility. Now, I recommend the one that lets you sneak up behind somebody and hit them from behind while they can't defend themselves. It doesn't say with a steel chair. It doesn't have to say with a steel chair. We get critical strike from rear. We don't have any weapon proficiencies. What are you going to use but a large blunt object that's readily available at hand? You back-raking, bear-hugging, chair-wielding son of a bitch. Now, it's true. There's one thing about Chin-A that doesn't work as advertised. Sure, we learned to do a combination parry attack. And in the description it says, every parry is an attempt to disable. Well, that's not so, because you can only use that move once per round, so really only 1 parry per turn is an attempt to disable. And actually, I'm checking the rulebook now, it says you can only use that move with the knife hand, the palm strike, the backhand, or hand weapons. We don't get any of those, so I guess none of our parries are attempts to disarm. But that's okay, because combination moves, they're trash. Combination moves, they slow down the game. They're for backflipping kung fu pansies. And on August 4th, on Mega Dumbcast, I'm gonna prove it when I slam drunken style kung fu in the dumpster where it belongs. Today we're discussing page 89 of Ninjas and Super Spies. On this page, we're gonna be talking about drunken style kung fu. Full disclosure here, right up front. Drunken style kung fu was my favorite style, back when I was a kid. I was first playing this game. It appealed to my goody two shoes preteen sensibilities in that while it is a sort of fun, wacky style to play in your action game, it is the Weird Al of martial arts styles. And yet, unlike the drunken kung fu that we typically see in fiction, you don't actually have to drink alcohol. You can be a teetotaling drunken kung fu master, which is just the sort of thing that caught my fancy. Despite the absence of actual alcohol, drunken style does involve fighting with a style reminiscent of a drunk. The description of the style says that a battle with a master of drunken style kung fu will be indistinguishable to the victim from simply having a really nasty encounter with a very lucky drunk. And the style has this stagger move. It's a way to enter that all-important close combat range where you can do all your same moves as you always could. But it has a special effect where if you succeed on a roll to stagger, which is both kind of a silly concept and something the game actually doesn't tell you how to do. It's not an attack or a defense, so I'm not sure what you're meant to be rolling. Then you gain initiative. Now granted, this takes an action, so you end up sacrificing an action to put yourself at the top of the initiative order for the round. So it's sort of a lot of table time for zero progress, but more on that as we go. The point for now is that we know you stagger, we know you appear to be a drunk. So what kind of drunk, exactly, does drunken style teach you to emulate? Is it an angry fighting drunk who feels no pain, picks fights, charges in after people? Definitely not. You will find that this is a style that does not focus on actually hitting your foe, actually damaging your foe, actually defeating opponents. These are vulgar fripperies for the kung fu dabbler. No, drunken style really focuses on the essence of advanced kung fu, which is showing off, trying to be clever, and having fights that go on for fucking ever. It is here where the path of the kung fu master intersects with the path of the drunk, specifically the asshole drunk who thinks he's really funny but nobody likes him. The thing about drunken style is it has more moves than any other style in the game, but they're heavily focused on defense and combination moves. And there's a lack of anything you can use to like seal the deal. So let me just run down what you get with this style. For your basic defenses, you've got your dodge, your parry, your automatic parry. For those of you who may be less familiar with Palladium, and since in their wisdom, they decided to define all their terms about all this combat we're going to be talking about much later in the book. When a move is automatic, it means you can do it without spending one of your precious actions. Actions are the lifeblood of the game. They're the limiting factor on what you can do, how long fights go. If you have enough actions, or if you have automatic moves, then each individual thing anyone tries to do can kind of grind down almost indefinitely into multiple dice rolls. So the one key automatic move that lengthens a melee round in Palladium is the automatic parry. Every time someone tries to hit you with a parryable move, you can roll to parry and it doesn't take up one of your actions. So okay, so far standard, right? Then we get on to our advanced defenses. You've got multiple dodge. This allows you to spend an action to dodge multiple foes who are all attacking you, including some who are not within your like range of vision. Then we've got an automatic dodge, which allows you to spend one action at the beginning of the turn, one of your two actions, to be able to get an automatic dodge against anything anyone tries to do to you. Already we're in trouble. If there is a hail of gunfire coming at you, as there will be, probably from your own team, because everyone is going to hate playing this game with you, because everything takes for fucking ever. When the other 10 members of your old school Palladium party decide to whip out their rifles and start firing at you, you can't parry bullets, but you can dodge them. And with your one action for automatic dodge, you get to make a dodge roll against every single shot. So you've spent half your actions for the turn, which means you only get to attack once this turn, but you do get to make all their attacks against you take twice as long because every one you get a dodge roll. Now, if someone after you've automatic dodged tries to shoot you from behind, then you can abort to the multiple dodge by spending another action. So now, whoops, you're out of actions, no attacks this turn, but you did still manage to dodge the one clever member of the party who tried to shoot you in the back of the head, trying in vain to put an end to this, the combat round that ate Manhattan. So okay, when you've got a drunken-style kung fu master in your party, I understand your natural reaction is just to whip out your pistol and immediately put a couple of bullets in his head, keep this from getting out of hand, keep him from dragging the campaign down into a black hole of endless rolls and actions, but with all those dodges, it's no good. He's like the Prince of Space. Your weapons are meaningless to him. You gotta fight fire with fire, so you gotta get in there with some kung fu. You gotta get in there with some hand-to-hand action. So what does the Drunken Master have to deal with this eventuality? Well, he's also got the combination parry slash attack. This is not a great move. As I mentioned before, you can automatically parry anything coming at you. So the question is, why would you want to do a combined action where you spend one action to parry and attack when you could parry for free and then attack for one action? Especially because when you do a combination parry attack, you get no bonuses to any of it. You don't get a bonus to parry, you don't get a bonus to hit with the attack, and you don't get a bonus to damage even with the attack. The advantage is that the attack you do in response to your foe with the combination parry attack, they can't automatic parry, so they have to spend an action defending themselves. That's one fewer action they have to attack you and attempt to mercy kill what has become an hour-long combat round. This maneuver, which I would entitle Defiant Drunk Takes Forever, is basically a spit in the face of anyone who thinks that combat is taking too long. It's like, look, you're drunk, go home, I'm gonna punch you out, right? Drunken Master says, fuck you, buddy, I'm going to make a combination parry attack in which I roll with no bonus to parry your punch. Then, after parrying it, I roll with no bonus to hit you. And then if by some chance I hit you, then I roll piddly little damage because I get no bonus to it. Then, to avoid taking that damage, you gotta spend an action to parry. Net effect, you've wasted two actions, I've wasted one action, and we're right back where we fucking started. Hey, time means nothing to me. I can do this all night. I'm just an asshole pretending to be more drunk than he is, trying to be the center of attention. But even the luck of a drunken asshole can't last forever. So finally, someday, your frustrated Shaolin master is going to manage to land a punch on the drunken master. Well, fortunately for the drunken master, and unfortunately for the rest of us, the drunken master has automatic roll. So rolling with punch is a maneuver you can use after you get hit with a punch or kick or other kind of blunt, like most of kung fu, to potentially half the damage. Now, normally you can only do this against, I think, like one foe per round. The Drunken Master can do it with every action, but you have to roll for it. This maneuver alone, in a fight, let's say like a hand-to-hand fight between the Drunken Master and a number of melee attackers, pretty much increases the length of the combat by 50%. Every time you hit this guy, he's got a roll to roll with punch. And then if he succeeds, then he takes half damage, further lengthening the combat. Imagine spending a 30-minute long combat round trying to hit the Drunken Master, then finally landing a punch, only to have him reduce the damage to half. Congratulations, you've done 4 points of SDC damage. Steady on, boys. By morning, we shall kill the drunk. We don't need to talk about all the attacks the Drunken Master gets. He's got some combination attacks, the reverse turning kick and the drop kick. Both of these are combination moves that combine a dodge with a kick. On the upside, this means that you are spending your actions to attack, albeit feebly. As with the combination parry attack, you don't get your bonuses to dodge, hit, or damage when you do these combination moves. So the effect is going to be to slow all damage that you both take and dish out to a trickle. However, these maneuvers are a show-off's dream. You get to roll to dodge everything that's done to you, and you get to roll attacks with both of your actions. Your attacks are big, fancy, spinny jump kicks, so someone just goes in to clock you, because of course they do, and you counter with, you know, a corkscrew enziguri, but it's really hard to do. Probably nothing will happen, and if it does, because you get no damage bonus, you're going to do a couple of points of damage, and now we're back where we started. Except you got to do a lot of impressive flips, and now combat continues. Like all styles, this one grants some martial arts powers. This one gives you 2 from among Arts of Invisibility and body hardening exercises, which give you more fucking SDC. Palladium is already a bloated system. When you introduce characters who have all these tactical options, this is, in a sense, the worst kind of incompetence that Palladium is responsible for. So I'm going to go ahead and say, you know, the stagger move, the signature move of this style that allows you to stagger drunkenly into combat and that mechanically does not work because it calls for a roll that doesn't exist. That's dumb, but it doesn't break your game. The dumbest thing on this page is giving multiple dodge, automatic roll, and combination dodge maneuvers all to one character who's only got 2 actions per turn to spend, virtually guaranteeing that any attempt to beat up this character is going to be just as frustrating, protracted, and incoherent as trying to run a Palladium combat while you are actually hammered. Today we're discussing page 90 of Ninjas and Super Spies. On this page we are introduced to one of the stronger styles in the game, Phoenix Eye Kung Fu. This is a highly aggressive, confrontational style that, as expected, does not work quite as intended due to some mechanical hiccups in the way that the style is implemented. But at its core, it's a style for aggressive creeps. this is a weird combination of the most fundamental self-defense class self-defense. This style actually has a move where you just grab your opponent and kick them in the balls. It involves throwing knees, choking, but it's also all about invading your opponent's space and making them feel weird. And I quote, Fong Nan means Phoenix Eye, a duo reference both to the Phoenix Eye strike, actually a variation on the double knuckle strike, and the eyeball-to-eyeball contact that one attempts to make with an opponent. And then it goes on to describe how this eye contact is established. At the first sign of a fight, the Fong Nan master will do a leap attack to get as close to the enemy as possible. Then, glaring directly into the enemy's eye, the Fong Nan master will strike with a variety of hand and foot attacks, simultaneously attempting to intimidate the opponent. So this is the first sign of a fight. This is a world away from the refined Chinese noble who stands there with the big droopy silk sleeves, and, you know, the hooligan comes up to you and starts trying to mess with you because you're a kung fu hotshot, and you're like, yes, I hear what you're saying, but I'm afraid that I'm not interested in this time at engaging you in kung fu combat. And then you whip out the fan and kind of solve the problem, right? But you're waiting until the situation clearly cannot end any other way but violence. Traditional kung fu movie stuff, right? You have to be pushed X number of times before you're allowed to bust out the kung fu. It's not sportsmanlike to just kung fu somebody straight off as soon as they say something nasty to you. Apparently, Phoenix Eye Kung Fu did not get the memo on this because that is what they do. Somebody yells at you from across the street like, hey, nice gi, asshole. And you're just bam, right there in their face. You jump across the fucking street and not only, you don't just jump across with a jump kick. Cause here's the funniest thing. The style description says you jump in with a leap attack, right? Which would be kind of badass. Like somebody mouths off to you and then before they can even finish their sentence, you're there with a fist in the face. Unfortunately, they forgot to give Fong Nan Kung Fu a leap attack. But you can jump. You can really jump, but you can't jump attack. So you just jump across the street and land in front of them and then just look them in the eyes. Just stare them down. The fact that you can jump right up in somebody's face, but then you can't attack them until your next turn. I mean, it's definitely a bug, but I'm going to go ahead and say it's a feature. I think that the beat between jumping up and looking somebody right in the eye and then kicking their ass, that's great. Just one full turn of eye contact before kung fu commences. From there, it's just a complete filthy, dirty beatdown. You get a one-handed choke, so you just grab somebody by the throat with one hand and then continue beating them up with the other while they struggle to get free. You've got that combination grab kick that I mentioned, where you grab your opponent with both hands and then kick them in the groin. That stuns your opponent for 1d4 melees, which is a long damn time. If they're not lucky, they're going to be stunned for 4 rounds while you're free to continue grabbing their throat and punching their testicles unimpeded. Not to mention that the damage is 2d6, which is like getting shot. Speaking of combat range, it's funny that this style, the only kick it gets is the snap kick, which is a kick that you can use at grappling range, because this style is very insistent about its psychology. Everything here is designed so that you can, like, maintain eye contact and stand as close to your opponent as possible. This is Dick's touching style kung fu. But this whole intimidation thing is just one shade off because of the mix-up with leap attack. So instead of this being an art form where you kill your opponent in an intimidating fashion by jumping in and pummeling them mercilessly until they're dead nonstop, 4 attacks per melee, it is the martial art for people who want to kill their foe and make it weird by jumping in, making eye contact, looking at them for an uncomfortably long period of time, and then pummeling them to death. And that little disconnect is the dumbest thing on this page. Join me next time on MDC, the Mega Dumbcast. This has been Mega Dumbcast. It is Mega Dumbcast on Twitter, Instagram, Gmail, Podbean, your favorite podcatcher, etc., etc. New episodes drop every day, except for Sundays, when all the previous week's episodes drop in one big chunk for your binging convenience. MDC, Palladium Books, Ninjas and Super Spies, and all associated trademarks are property of Kevin Ciambietta. This slightly annoying theme song is Cartoon Battle by Kevin MacLeod, whose work you can find at incompetech.com. The gong sound effect was recorded by Daniel Simon. Dumbheads, I will catch you next time.